Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
Our thanks to Adams Road Band for that musical introduction. Welcome to this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry. With me today is Eric Johnson, my colleague at MRM. The Dead Sea Scrolls are coming to Salt Lake City, and we wanted to talk about the Dead Sea Scrolls because, one, we've been to Cave 1, where the Isaiah Scroll was discovered back in 1947, and we are going to be leading another trip back to the Holy Land in February of 2015. Hope you can join us on that trip. And if you need any more information on that trip, you can go to our website, mrm.org, and click on the right-hand side. You'll see an icon and a link that'll give you all the information. But the Dead Sea Scrolls coming to Salt Lake City, this is a rarity. This exhibit has only been to a limited number of cities. You and I saw this exhibition when we were in San Diego, yeah. And we figured, well, that'd be about 10 years ago. It was quite impressive.
Down at Balboa Park.
That's exactly right. Let's give our listeners a little bit of a background of what this is all about, because we would hope, if you're Christian, that you would go to this. It's not that expensive.
$25
for an adult. $25 to see this is really not a lot, but it would really be worth your while to go down and view this. And so let's give a little bit of a history of it.
Well, the Dead Sea Scrolls contain about 1,000 different manuscripts. And we'll be talking, I'll talk a little later in today's show about what those exactly are. But when this first cave of 11 that were eventually discovered was discovered by these Arab boys, the one named Ali threw a rock in there and heard the shattering of pottery. Well, it was a container jar of one of the scrolls. He comes back the next morning.
Shouldn't we go back a little further, though? Why are the scrolls there? That in of itself, if you know Israeli history, is very important because it had to do with the war. The Romans and the Jews at that time, they were hiding these scrolls from the Romans.
Absolutely.
So they put them up into these caves, hoping that the Romans would never search the caves. Apparently they didn't.
Okay, well, what happened was there was a Jewish revolt that took place with Rome. And so Titus came. Now, that revolt started in AD 66. Titus came, and I think they realized their time was short because they're out in the middle of nowhere. There's no protection. There's no ability to stop.
Out in the middle of nowhere is really an understatement.
Yeah. So what ends up happening 2 years later in AD 68, the Roman 10th Legion destroys the Qumran settlement, and they actually turned it into a Roman garrison. They have found pig bones there, and that confused archaeologists for years until they realized they actually built a settlement of their own there. What had happened, these Jewish folks who were Essenes, and again, it's controversial as to whether or not they were Essenes, but it was a sect of Judaism. You had Pharisees and Sadducees. Well, these Essenes didn't like those people because they disagreed with the whole Hasmonean line, so to speak, and so they would have held to none of the temple rituals that would have been done there. There were also zealots, of course, but you had the Essenes, a minor group out in the middle of nowhere, who took their writings and had a library there at Qumran. They believed in preserving the text. So they ended up in 66 taking those, putting them in these jars, many of them. Others, they didn't. They just threw the scrolls like K4. There were hundreds of manuscripts there, and they just threw them in there. And they actually deteriorated. But the ones that were kept in these jars for almost 2,000 years, very well preserved. One of the worst things that could have happened to those scrolls was discovery of them, because what ended up happening is you got the air elements and so many other things. And Israel's a very dry place. And so it was a very, very well situated in these caves to be able to keep them dry and all the rest. But man has pretty much taken these scrolls, and they're very slowly deteriorating, and they're doing their best to preserve them. So we come now to 1947, the rock in the cave. Now they go in, and they were disappointed, Bill. Ali was hoping for the pot of gold that they still look for in these hills. In fact, I went one time to Cave 1, and there was you could see where there was recent digging, and Joel Kramer, who was with us, said they are continually looking for new scrolls, because if they can find new scrolls, how much money that would be for these poor Bedouin out there who don't have a whole lot going on except for goats. Anyway, they were disappointed, and they thought, you know, this is made of leather. Let's take it to a cobbler. So they took it to a guy named Kondo, and Kondo has a whole history of his own. But Kondo was quite a businessman, and he sees this, and he goes, you don't have much of anything. He gives him a few dollars, but even he didn't know what it was, and he ends up selling these four scrolls that he bought from these boys. He sells them to his church leader called, his name was Samuel, and he was a head of the church there in Jerusalem for an Eastern church. I forget if it was Antioch, I forget, Syrian, one of those denominations that come out of Eastern Orthodoxy, and he sold it for $97, these four scrolls that later sold for a lot of money. And the man who was probably most responsible for us to know what this was all about was a man named John Trevor. John Trevor was a photographer, and when he heard about this discovery, he went to Israel, took his camera, and in an unconventional way started taking pictures of these and sent them back to the United States, the East Coast. And the biblical scholars who saw them were amazed, and they said, "You have a discovery of a lifetime." Well, that was some of the worst news that anybody could have, because once the word got out that these were valuable, then all of the shepherds from all the valleys around started going around and looking for these scrolls. And that's where, over the course of the next 12, 13 years, shepherds were oftentimes finding caves before the scholars were, and sometimes the scholars were in second. For instance, Cave 4, which you can see from the village in Qumran, there was, in this cave, everything had been raped from all of the pieces that were there. And fortunately, the scholars dug a hole, and there was another floor, and it had all of these pieces. And we get most of our pieces from Cave 4 that the Bedouin shepherds could not yet find. But the Israeli Antiquities Authority, I don't know if it was called that at that time, ended up making an offer to everybody: if you bring in your pieces, we will give you money for them. And so they were bringing them back in little matchbox, little pieces. And so imagine all of these scholars getting all of these little pieces and trying to put the puzzle back together again. They're still working on it. What a discovery. 11 different caves, almost 1,000 different manuscripts. Joel believes that someday there's going to be an earthquake, and there will be shown that there are more scrolls there. But the Essenes, an interesting people that wrote these, they lived out in the desert. They wanted to be separate from everybody else. They called themselves the Yahad, which in Hebrew means community. And so they were looking for the coming of the Messiah, which we would look for now as the second coming of Christ. They look for as this Messiah that would solve all of their problems. And so these Essenes built an incredible village. You can go visit that today. We'll have a chance to go visit. They built a scriptorium, two levels, where they actually worked on just transcribing these scrolls onto papyrus and vellum, the animal skin. And there's not just Bible scrolls. I think people sometimes think it's only Bible scrolls. Actually, only a quarter of all the scrolls found there are biblical scrolls. More than half of it comes from Jewish literature. The Apocrypha and Pseudepigrapha were very prominent there. And in fact, the Essenes were kind of a unique group. They were not traditional Jews by any stretch of the imagination. And so some of the things that they most valued are not valued by the typical Jewish person. Then they had a quarter of them were sectarian texts, 200 plus manuscripts there, and only a quarter of them were from the Bible. Now, when it comes to the Bible, they wrote more on certain kinds of books than others. There's one book that they never did discover it yet. They're still looking for it. Do you know which book I'm referring to? Which book could it be? Somebody who does not mention the name of God, and it's about a woman. How about Esther? A book of Esther is not found. Everybody else is. And so that's one of the reasons a lot of scholars say that they did not use Esther, because it glorifies a woman, and they were not into women. Very much a man society. And then you basically have, the most popular writings would have been, for any Jew, would have been the first five books, which we call the Pentateuch. They, in fact, more than half of all of the fragments come from the Pentateuch. But they also liked Isaiah, and they liked Psalms, and they liked the Minor Prophets. They were very much into any kind of prophecy because they were able to take that and they were able to turn that into when this Messiah figure would come. And they talked oftentimes about light and darkness and the wars that would go on there. But the scrolls from K1 are probably the most valuable. Not only do we have a complete version of Isaiah, the book of Isaiah, that predates the previous text that we had before, the Masoretic text, the earliest would be the 10th century AD. This comes from the 1st century BC. It bridged the gap by 1,000 years. And you know what they found, Bill? When they did study on this great scroll of Isaiah, they discovered that it is, except maybe for some punctuation marks, it's almost the same 1,000 years later, and it bridged our gap so we could get that much closer to what the original was all about. And that's an amazing thing when you think about how valuable that scroll is. And we mentioned in yesterday's show how they used to have it all the way around in the Shrine of the Book on in the where the Israeli Museum is, but it's deteriorated as well. But that has been incredible find. Plus, they found an incomplete Isaiah in the Cave 1, commentary on Habakkuk. They had what's called the rule of the community, the different rules. They were very strict on rules. Thanksgiving hymns, the war scroll, the famous war scroll. These are all amazing things. And you have a chance to go to the Leonardo and see fragments, granted fragments. But in fact, Kondo's family, he's dead now. But his family are selling some of the pieces that he has, making the Israeli folks very upset because they own 99% of it. But he's selling these pieces for $30,000, $40,000 a piece, making them upset. But he said the Israeli museum couldn't afford it, so I'm selling it to the people who can afford that. So collectors are going crazy trying to buy these pieces.
This is a fascinating story, and we want to continue our talk on the Dead Sea Scrolls, and we're going to do that in tomorrow's broadcast.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism. Is there not much of a difference between Mormonism and Christianity? Well, actually, despite what many may think, there is. And when it comes to the sensitive and even highly charged issue that is eternal ramifications, the Christian may not know where to turn. Just trying to understand the Mormons' beliefs can be both confusing and frustrating. That's why Mormonism 101 was written, a book resource by Mormonism Research Ministries Bill McKeever and Eric Johnson that contrasts vital doctrines such as who is God, what is Scripture, and how a person is able to go to heaven. When the two religions are placed side by side, the differences are many. Mormonism 101 is a tool that will help you better understand the doctrines of your Latter-day Saint friend, family member, or co-worker. And it even has witnessing tips available to help you in future conversations. Published by Baker Books, Mormonism 101 is available at mrm.org or ask for it at your favorite Christian bookstore. As 1 Peter 3 says, always be prepared to give an answer.